Next, then, we discuss item I. It's an action item. This is judicial administration, statewide traffic tickets, and the slash infraction amnesty program.
And Chief, just for your information, there isn't any public comment. We have had staff check. I know Corey also checked, and there wasn't anyone here for public comment.
Very good. And our presenters are Mary Beth Todd, Chair of the Court Executive Advisory Committee, Mr. Corey Jasperson, Judicial Council Governmental Affairs, Mr. Bob Fleshman, Judicial Council Finance, and Mr. Courtney Tucker, Judicial Council Criminal Justice Services. Thank you and welcome.
Thank you, Chief. So what we are bringing before you today are a set of amnesty program guidelines that the Judicial Council is required to develop and adopt for implementing the amnesty program, which was part of the budget trailer bill that was passed back in June. Last night, we did receive written comments regarding this item, and you should have all received a copy of that, a paper copy, I believe. Paper copy. And then in response to those comments, staff worked very quickly to come up with a redline version of the guidelines that were provided in your meeting materials, and those should have been provided to you and are the pink packet here. Many of the comments provided were really requests for reinforcing language to emphasize certain points, and given we had no objection to that, staff did go ahead and make some of those changes. The reason we're here today is, given with the comments, it appears maybe there is some unsettlement around the guidelines. But we're bringing it to you today because the program begins on October 1st. The budget trailer bill was passed on June 24th. The program implements on October 1st. So we had to get these guidelines into place quickly because this program, unlike prior amnesty programs, is much more expanded, includes a lot more elements to it that courts are going to have to scramble to do some reprogramming of case management systems, get perhaps even hire staff to get them in place, there are forms, etc. So there's a lot of work that's going to be involved. This is the last Judicial Council meeting that was scheduled prior to that October 1st date, and so that's why we're bringing it here today, and that's why it appears like it's coming to you in a hurry. It is in a hurry. So we're considering, Corey will discuss that this is not the program. He'll talk later. If you'll recall, in the governor's January budget, there was a proposal for an amnesty program. It doesn't look like that initial program, and Corey's going to talk about that later. It's far more expanded. So what we had was on June 24th, we had an amnesty program that the legislature adopted. We took a look at it. We had to put implementing guidelines into place. Staff began immediately to get to work on those guidelines. Bob Fleshman and his team took the lead on that. They consulted with Rick Feldstein and I as a leadership with the Court Executive Advisory Committee. We quickly identified a group of subject matter experts to work with. Thankfully, we already had in place an informal collections working group that actually was a spinoff of the provided subject matter expert support to the court-ordered debt task force, as I recall. We felt that these guidelines, we needed the people who are down in the weeds, and this was an excellent work group to go to use. That work group is led by Chris Volkers. And then Rick and I both made a point of attending. If both of us couldn't be on the calls, at least one of us would cover the calls, so that we knew, we were watching for any kind of issues that might bubble up so that we could deal with them quickly, fastly, and get the right people at the table to deal with it. Draft guidelines were prepared. They were sent to the council and posted on the public website last Friday, August 14th. Since then, input from vested stakeholders has continued to stream in, and we've made it a priority to review, assess, and incorporate that feedback where possible. The most recent input came in last night and was, as I mentioned, handed out to you earlier. To provide perspective on the suggested revisions that we made today, the clarifying language is about program fees, maintaining financial information as confidential, not collecting any and all civil assessments, emphasizing the need to keep financial information confidential. We added language to address eligibility under AB 60, which covers undocumented individuals. In addition to the relief provided with respect to fines owed, this program is expanded and also provides some relief with respect to driver's license suspensions over and above what the relief you would get with the holds on and the underlying fine issue. The new language, we also address new language on vacating warrants on eligible violations. We keep coming up with kind of unique and one-off situations that need to be addressed in the guidelines. So we're also emphasizing that local programs or third-party collecting entities cannot apply any additional fees not already assessed outside of the $50 program fee if not previously assessed. And we're adding a provision to compel courts and counties to post program information on their respective websites and facilities. So that presents the bulk of the changes we made in response to the comments received. There were numerous other suggested revisions, but we're limited to making changes based on within the statutory limitations we have before us now. Some of those include extending the reduction to lower levels than stipulated. Those are some of the requests that were made. We don't feel we can do that within the confines of the statute as it currently stands. So we've also added language to clarify the definition of currently with regards to making payments, tying it to the June 24th enactment date of SB 85. That was very important because there was an element of the statute that said anyone who is currently on a payment plan wouldn't be eligible, and so we needed to clean that up so that you didn't become eligible by stopping to make your payments. So it was important that we get that clarified. Will these be the last changes? It's very possible that additional changes may occur through legislative action. There are continuing discussions as we sit here with respect to some additional bills that are out there. You will note that we are making a recommendation today to delegate authority to the administrative director to revise the guidelines in response to any legislative or related action affecting amnesty program parameters. The comment did touch on, had a bit of a concern with respect to that delegation of authority. We do want to make it clear that authority would be given to making technical changes in order to implement any subsequent statute that is enacted and has to be implemented by this October 1st deadline. Should there be any type of policy recommendation change, that of course would come back to the Judicial Council. So with that, I'm going to apologize in advance. This was set up for me to have kind of a preamble first and then opening remarks, and it sounded like we're not going to have public comment. We wanted to give you a tee up in the event there was public comment so you would have a good understanding. So if my remarks seem a little bit out of order, that's the reason why. I do want to acknowledge the Herculean effort of Judicial Council staff and the staff in the trial courts and our collaborative working group. The collaborative working group consisted of collection experts from courts, counties, as well as representatives from the California State Association of Counties, California Revenue Officers Association, Probation Managers Association, and the Victim Compensation and Government Claims Board. All of these representatives have met up to twice weekly over the past 6 weeks to assist staff in developing the guidelines. I asked, as I mentioned before, Chris Volkers, who from the San Bernardino Superior Court is their court executive officer, chairs this group, and it was amazing how quickly they dropped everything that they were doing so that they could make these calls and ensure that we put in place guidelines that we could put into effect on October 1st and have them ready in time to get to the trial courts so the trial courts can start doing the business of reprogramming, putting staff into place and policies into place. So what you see before you today represents our best faith effort to develop appropriate guidance for courts and counties statewide. So to give some perspective on the legislative history and the activity that was going on for probably the past 6 months prior to this passing, I'm going to turn it over to Corey, and then following that, we'll get into the mechanics of the actual guidelines, the outreach efforts that will be undertaken, and the implementation plan with Bob Fleshman, who has served, as I mentioned, as the staff lead for this project throughout. So, and we also have Courtney Tucker here to help us with any legal aspects of the program. He has been a great resource for us to tap into to as we kind of ferret through. As we saw with our rule proposal we had about a month ago, these are some complex issues. Traffic can get pretty complex, and how we address some of them, and he's been an excellent resource on that. And I do want to give a shout out to the collections team at the Ventura Superior Court. They've been, when we were going through the legislative process, they were at the ready when we would call and need some expert advice and analysis, and they also did a fantastic job in supporting our efforts as we worked with legislative staff on this program.
Thank you, Mary Beth. And perhaps in monitoring my email and text stream here, it sounds like maybe the representative from Bay Area Legal Aid is here. I don't know if anyone just came in, or maybe we can watch if someone comes in and has got a text that they were trying to get someone over here.
I'll check.
If he's, I think his name's Gary Lewis. Yeah, they're checking. I'm not sure if he's in the building. Well, I think, as Mary Beth had mentioned, the amnesty proposal changed pretty significantly from what we saw in the January 10th budget proposal. At that point in time, it was a very narrow program focused on trying to bring in some additional revenue to backfill a shortfall in the state penalty fund. And between the January 10 introduction of the budget and a very narrow amnesty program and the May revise, the interest really increased in the legislature and in the administration, and there was legislation on a parallel track introduced by Senator Hertzberg, which was a much more expansive amnesty program that was, rather than just focused on trying to generate revenue to backfill a shortfall in the state penalty fund, instead it was a much broader program, really focused on trying to provide as much assistance as possible to low-income individuals and, individuals in general who, for whatever reason, had been unable to pay outstanding traffic fines and fees. And so the proposal, many elements of the Hertzberg bill were incorporated into the administration's proposal, and what we saw in the May revise was a much broader, much more involved program. Bob and Courtney will be able to get into the details of that, but it is a lot of moving pieces this time around, different than the amnesty program that was implemented back in 2012, including a driver's license component that is concurrent with the amnesty program that we didn't see before. And as Mary Beth also mentioned, there is continuing discussions going on. The components in the Hertzberg bill that were consolidated into the amnesty trailer bill were removed from the Hertzberg bill, but there are still some provisions in the Hertzberg bill that are going forward. In fact, it was amended as recently as Tuesday of this week. And so we'll continue to work on the legislation and work with all the advocates and legislative staff. But also, as Mary Beth mentioned, it may be necessary to make further changes to the guidelines if the Hertzberg bill moves forward and is signed into law in the next couple of weeks. And we've been operating under a very compacted time frame between June 24th, when the trailer bill took effect, and October 1st, when the amnesty program would need to launch. The Department of Motor Vehicles is already well on their way. We worked with them to develop a one-page insert that goes into all of the vehicle registration renewals, and I believe DMV indicated that that insert will start getting mailed out at the end of September. And so that'll be going out to literally, I think they have something like 28 million vehicle registration renewals on an annual basis. So there'll be a lot of interest in that in the coming weeks as, more information gets out to the public about the program. We didn't have enough time to take the guidelines through a formal public comment process, given the short time frame. But we have had numerous meetings with legislative staff, administrative staff from the governor's office, the Department of Finance, and we have shared several drafts of the guidelines as we have been developing this. You know, we've been sharing the drafts with staff in the legislature and the governor's office, as well as the advocates, to make sure they're seeing the guidelines, and we're trying to incorporate as much of their feedback and input as we can. So that's sort of where we are. You know, happy to answer any questions about the legislation, and turn it over to Bob.
Thanks, Corey. In an effort not to be too redundant, I won't repeat many of the points that have been stated, but we'll emphasize a couple of things. For those that remember the 2012 program, that was a collection, that was part of a broader package of collections tools sponsored by the council. The parameters compared to this program were far simpler. It was essentially a 50% reduction on eligible citations and paid in full. No driver's license element, no other reduction element. This program really has three potential groups of folks. You're eligible for a reduction at either 50 or 80%. You're eligible for a reduction at those levels and driver's license reinstatement, or you're eligible for driver's license reinstatement only. So there's really three pools of folks that potentially they could fall in. That brings a lot more complexity to the program for programs locally, courts or counties, that are responsible for administering. And I do want to emphasize that point. We've said courts a lot, but in many cases, counties are responsible for administering the program because that's the agreements that are in place. So going back to this legislation, it's very specific. We're passing guidelines for courts and counties, and that is the responsibility the council has had with regards to collections for the past several years. So I just wanted to point that out as a highlight of the program and how this is really far more complex than the last one. In the last program, you had to pay in full. In this one, there's a payment plan option. So that adds yet another element. And to throw it in there between courts and counties, in some cases, third-party vendors administer the programs for local entities. So there's that complexity thrown in on top of that. As you've seen in your guidelines, Mary Beth has walked you through many of the changes that were detailed in the pink sheet that you got earlier this morning. For those that are following online, that document should be posted on the council meeting page in the section for this item, and if it's not, it should be there shortly, so you can see where we're following. But by and large, most of these changes are clarifying language, emphasis on certain issues to be responsive to stakeholders. We thought that was really important. I know it's unusual to get a revised version the day of the meeting, but we thought, given the volume of comments that came in and the sensitivity of this issue, that it was key that we respond accordingly. There are some other changes in there, as Mary Beth noted, defining what currently means, that date, which could change it even again, depending on the outcome of active legislation. I did want to, what also was different this time is our outreach and collaboration with interested parties like DMV. They have that large role. Corey mentioned the insert. It's been translated into 9 languages. These are the 9 languages that are most frequently encountered by DMV call centers based on a study they're mandated to do every other year. That insert directs folks to a web page, which we have had set up since the first week of July. That web page is hosted here on the council's public site, and it really is for potential participants, written in as lay-speak as possible, given how complicated some of the language is, to determine if they could be eligible. Our communications team also developed a video, a 90-second informational video that is loaded on a YouTube platform. Its views have now gone into the thousands. YouTube, as part of the Google entity of items, there's a translation tool there that allows it to be translated into 52 languages in closed captioning, which is access that was not there last time when we did the program. So that's some tools, and we're working very closely with DMV to ensure their desk procedures for their staff, because of course they're going to be inundated with calls, are reflective of where they know where to send people correctly, because we don't want folks to go on a wild goose chase. We want them to give them the appropriate resources so they can call the right court or the right county and not go through a long list of things. We're also working with the Franchise Tax Board. They, of course, are listed no less than 6 times in the legislation in terms of being an entity that could be responsible for any default on payments. We're working with them closely. They were also involved in the 2012 program, so their systems are ready to go, and we have high confidence in that. The other outside entity is the State Comptroller's Office. They, of course, have special responsibilities that you see detailed in the action plan part of the guidelines, and that has to do with special distributions. One thing we want to emphasize is the intent behind all this is there is no impact locally to distributions, that staff, who I know have a lot of anxiety, aren't wound up with what they see as major changes to how where the money ends up going. That is intended to be the State Comptroller's Office responsibility for the money. As Corey mentioned, the State Penalty Fund that will now be getting some dedicated aspect of these revenues. We're continuing to work with them closely because there's some reporting guidance that has to come out both from them and from Judicial Council with regards to that technical reporting that happens for collections revenue. I do want to emphasize, as indicated in the council report, the scope of the input received. This has been, this whole process, as you know from the timeline, has like been hitting a bullet with another bullet, sitting on a merry-go-round blindfolded. It's been pretty, it's been a moving target is an understatement, but we have been able to reach out with the Traffic Advisory Committee, the Presiding Judges Advisory Committee, and the Court Executives Advisory Committee, getting input and feedback from them. And so I did want to call that out. In addition to, I did want to talk about some of the implementation tools that we're working on other than the participant webpage, the YouTube video. We also are developing a partner site. That's for our court and county programs and our third-party collection vendors that will include these guidelines once approved, a sample form, a form and a reporting tool, both of which are still kind of evolving to ensure we are able to capture the right information, provide the right tools to the programs, both of which you see examples in your reports today. And we're going to continue working on those through implementation. We're also working on the finer points. We're calling them an FAQs document, which will be the implementation kind of crutch for local programs, where we can get into really the minutia that's not included in the guidelines. And then finally, in September, we're going to be doing rollout informational sessions. Courts, counties, vendors, stakeholders. There's a lot of local partners that are very interested in this, which we may hear from today, one of those. And we want to make sure that we're able to provide accurate information so that they can rely accurate information to their constituents. And so we'll be having those open sessions in September by teleconference and WebEx for those folks.
Can I just add on about the reports that are in the materials, and correct me if I'm wrong, the more basic report is what would be mandatory for the courts to report, and the more expanded one would be voluntary for them to collect that information. Is that correct?
That's correct. Thanks for bringing that up, Mary Beth. So if you look at the legislation, there's only 3 components that are required. How many cases resolved, how much did it cost, and how much did you collect? And when we went back to look at the last program and when we're trying to be effective advocates on this one, we didn't have enough data really to support our case of, how many folks came in and were deemed ineligible, because that's staff time that was taken up, but that's nowhere reflected. And so what you see is a more simple template, which reflects the mandatory components of the program, and then the wish list, which is the much longer second sheet of optional components. We know not all programs have the capability to respond to these items or have the resources to do these, but if we do get a representative sample on this, we'll have at least some basis of data so that when it comes up, and it will come up again, there's a lot of interest in the area of collections and court order debt, we'll at least have a better handle on some data that we can use to respond and advocate.
Yeah, I just was going to add, throughout the discussions we had with legislative staff and Department of Finance staff regarding the proposed program, we wish we had those statistics, because, we can tell them we're pretty sure how things are going to roll out, but without that supporting backup data to really demonstrate why we feel that way, we just weren't able to get as far as we had hoped we could get to craft this in a way that would be more manageable by the courts and counties. And so I'll use this as an opportunity to any courts that are listening in, to the extent that you can collect this more expanded data, it will truly serve the branch to help formulate better legislation going forward. As we know, we are going to continue to see kind of the traffic and fine processes change due to the will of the people and the legislature and even the branch. So I will make that PR push to trial courts and counties to collect that information.
And I just to summarize what we're asking you to do today is to approve the revised guidelines as they were provided to you this morning. We're also seeking that delegated authority to make technical changes, because we do certainly expect there could be additional program changes or areas we find, like as Mary Beth mentioned earlier, these one-offs where, while there's some really specific things that I don't think the authors thought about, and maybe perhaps we as staff hadn't thought about through this development period, as well as the reporting aspect to this detail in recommendation number two. Happy to take any questions.
And Bob, I would just also add the we caught an error just moments ago. The where we define currently making payments as June 24th, 2015. In the prior version, we had January 1st, 2013 as a placeholder, and so we had at least one spot on page four where we had the wrong date, that it needs to be June 24th, 2015.
That's on page four of the revised guidelines.
Thank you. Judge Rosenberg and then Justice Miller.
Thank you, Chief. I had a quick question about the finances and the impacts on courts and, I guess, on counties. First of all, the fee that can be charged, has that been calculated to be sufficient to reimburse the court for the time and effort involved here? And second aspect, I noticed that there was a $250,000 that was going to be paid to DMV from the branch. Where's that coming from?
Great questions, Judge Rosenberg. On the $50, I do want to point out that cost recovery under Penal Code 1463-007, which is the guiding statute for cost recovery for delinquent quarter debt collections, still applies for amnesty. So that cost recovery element is still there. One element of which that we briefly covered is that civil assessment for every eligible violation is not to be collected, regardless of how many, if more, one or more, have been previously assessed. So the $50 really ties more closely to that element being removed versus the cost of doing business, since we did get cost recovery. And I do want to point out that, and Corey can add to this, is an earlier version of this program did not include cost recovery at all.
Or the $50.
So, thanks, Corey. On the $250,000, the $250,000 was another late add to this that wasn't there before, as Corey just mentioned. And the mechanics on that are anything but simple. So what happens is the part of the state controller's responsibility is they're responsible for identifying the first $250,000 that are remitted of amnesty-related revenues, so not part of the rest of collections, and then transferring that money to the Judicial Council so the Judicial Council can reimburse the DMV for cost associated with administering the program. So that includes the translation of the inserts, the production of the inserts, the mailing, as well as any personnel time involved, and they have been putting a lot of time in for the court throughout the course of the program. So that's the element there. I'm sure there were simpler, more efficient ways for that to be addressed, but that's how it ended up in the final program.
And my question is, and it's, with regards to the delegation, it's my understanding that we're going to delegate, if this is approved, delegate that to the administrative director to make the minor technical changes that may come up. There's a change in the statute language or something of that nature. Anything of a policy matter will come back to the council if that would happen.
Absolutely.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes, Justice Hall.
I don't want to be premature, but I would move approval of the recommendations.
And that was a second by, thank you, Judge Rubin. Let me be clear. This is the revised, as for recommendation number one, it's the revised guidelines. It's also an amendment to the date, as Corey has indicated. So let me also say several things first. When in January we learned of the amnesty program, we had a great interest as a judicial council to ensure that things such as our costs were being recovered, and we were concerned about the timeline. And I know that there was a lot of work by the court executives, the trial court presiding judges advisory committee, all of the advisory committees, including judicial council staff, and Corey and his and Office of Governmental Affairs, and Martin, about making sure that the ultimate program that emerged covered our concerns, or at least they were aware of our concerns and addressed them in some way. And so what we have today is the product of that. And I know how fast and furious it was from Corey when I was getting emails about what this meant, and Martin's discussions with the governor's office and their idea to get where we are today. That was just to the amnesty program we have, not let alone the responsibilities for the guidelines, as Mary Beth said. It's coming at you fast because it is fast. So I commend all who had a major part to play in creating the guidelines that are in front of us under a circumstance that happened on top of all the work that we all normally do. So I appreciate that. All in favor of the recommendations as stated, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Motion carries. Thank you.